This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. The United States has just begun bombing the North African country of Libya. Of course, it was only 5 years ago that the U.S., along with NATO, deposed and killed a longtime Libyan dictator, Muammar Gaddafi, leaving the nation in ruins. In fact, President Obama had admitted that the worst mistake of his tenure was, quote, failing to plan for the day after intervening in Libya. Now, with the Islamic State as a new target, the U.S. has resumed bombing. At the same time, a car bomb in the Libyan city of Benghazi just detonated, killing 22 people. Joining me is Vijay Prashad. He's a professor of international studies at Trinity College in Hartford, Connecticut. He's the author of 18 books, including Arab Spring, Libyan Winter. His newest book is The Death of the Nation and the Future of the Arab Revolution. And he's just published an article in Alternet about the Libya bombing. It's entitled, It's Bombs Away for the USA in Libya. Welcome to the program, Vijay.
Thanks a lot, Sonali.
So first, this backdrop is very important. The fact that 5 years ago, the U.S. had already intervened in Libya, leaving it in chaos. How much of the reasons that the U.S. is saying it needs to go back into Libya is related directly to the program 5 years ago?
Well, it's related both to the NATO war in 2011 and to the struggle that's been ongoing in Syria. Firstly, of course, the NATO bombing in 2011 destroyed the institutions of the Libyan state and left it in virtual chaos, allowing a vacuum to develop in cities like Sirte. But in the aftermath of the immediate overthrow of Gaddafi, intelligence agencies from the region and from the West were quite happy to see Libyan extremists go through Turkey into Syria, where some of them ended up in the Islamic State. They were also joined by people from Tunisia, which sent a very large number of fighters to go and battle first Bashar al-Assad and then to fight alongside the Islamic State. Well, when the United States started bombing Islamic State targets in Syria, these Libyan and Tunisian fighters returned home. And they came into this vacuum in places like Sirte, fought off other militia groups, and basically founded the Vilayat of the Islamic State on the detritus, not only of NATO's war in 2011, but also on the failed strategy vis-a-vis Syria.
And so how is the U.S. justifying this latest bombing campaign? Is this basically the U.S. saying, well, since we're bombing northern Iraq, since we're bombing Syria, and those are all aimed at the Islamic State, and since there is Islamic State presence in Libya, we have to add that to the list?
Well, you're quite right. I mean, remember that in 2001, there was essentially an open permission slip given by the U.S. Congress to fight this global war on terror. George Bush understood this global war on terror as being timeless and spaceless. In other words, unbounded in time and space. And the war against the Islamic State is being seen in the same guise. Any theater is acceptable, and this war might go on forever. Interestingly, this is not the first bombing since 2011. The United States has bombed Sirte in November of last year and in February of this year, in a sense, without much gained by those bombing runs.
And so that means that there has never really been a complete disengagement from Libya. You write in your article in Alternet about Benghazi, where I mentioned there's been a car bomb just recently killing 22 people here in the U.S. As you point out, all that people have ever heard of Benghazi, as if it's its own really separate country and entity, is that because that's eclipsed the idea of Libya, is something that's come from the Republicans, that it's something that they can lay at the feet of Hillary Clinton when she was Secretary of State. But Benghazi is a city in Libya, and it is also suffering and struggling tremendously. Can you explain the sort of backdrop, a framework of why this car bomb is going off in a city like Benghazi?
Well, one of the things I think that we need to pay some attention to is that when the NATO bombing of the Gaddafi positions took place in 2011, many of the ground troops that were fighting with NATO as their air force were very extreme groups, you know, groups that had been part of the Libyan Islamic Fighting Group. some of these groups, after the overthrow of Gaddafi, reconstituted themselves in formations known as Ansar al-Sharia, and eventually they created the Benghazi Shura Council of Revolutionaries. Well, this group has basically insinuated itself into the second largest city of Libya, and over the course of the last 18 months has been in a pitched battle with a general, a rogue general, by the name of Khalifa Haftar, who, you know, has basically built his own military outside civilian control and has been fighting the Benghazi Shura Council. So Benghazi, this city where the uprising began in 2011, has been ripped apart by this war, very little coverage of what's been happening there. So while the West has focused attention on the Islamic State, that's largely because of the so-called brand of the Islamic State. You know, it's easy to explain to people, Islamic State here, Islamic State there, you have to hit them everywhere. But in Benghazi, the so-called crucible of the uprising, there is, in a sense, an even more grave problem, where two sides, both beneficiaries of the NATO bombing, have been at each other's throats, and, you know, untold numbers of civilian casualties in that city.
Now, as far as you understand, what is the framework within which the U.S. has begun this latest bombing campaign? Apparently, military officials have said that this will be a sustained offensive against the militant group, i.e. the Islamic State. And, quote, one Pentagon spokesperson said, "We don't have an end point at this particular point of time," which seems to be the sort of standard MO for most of the U.S.'s military incursions under President Obama.
Well, you're quite right. I mean, look, I'd said earlier that when the United States started to bomb IS positions in northern Syria and in Iraq, many of the fighters from the Islamic State immediately decamped. They went back to Belgium, they went back to France, they went back to Tunisia, to Libya. You know, they took with them their ideology, they took with them their skills. We saw, of course, what this meant inside Europe, when in Molenbeek, which had sent a very large number of fighters, again, flagged off happily by European intelligence services when they thought these fighters would go and help overthrow Bashar al-Assad. Well, the same situation is now going to take place in Libya. If the West merely bombs CERT, fighters, Libyan fighters, Tunisian fighters are going to decamp. They're going to go to Tunisia. Already on the Tunisian-Libyan border, there have been fierce firefights between Islamic State fighters and the Tunisian military. Last week, the Prime Minister of Tunisia faced a no-confidence vote in parliament, which he lost. You know, that country is very fragile. And if these fighters, under pressure from the United States in CERT, decide to cross the border back into Tunisia, you'll see another country essentially falling into chaos. So there's no long-term strategy. You know, this idea that you can bomb from the skies and make terrorism disappear should be actually strongly re-evaluated by the United States government. It didn't work after 9/11, and it's not going to work now.
I mentioned, Vijay, what President Obama said when asked about the worst mistake of his career, and he basically said it was not planning for the day after the intervention in Libya. What could the U.S. have done? Say that, you know, if you set aside the foolishness of the NATO operation in 2011, could the U.S. have taken actions to basically have a slightly greater political and social stability that could have undermined what we're seeing playing out today?
Well, look, I mean, how many times does this lesson have to be taught to people in power? And obviously, they are not interested in this lesson. When the United States overthrew the government in Iraq, something very interesting occurred. Saddam Hussein, when he was arrested, said, "I am Saddam Hussein, I am the president of Iraq, and I want to negotiate." And the U.S. troops laughed at him, spat in his face, and then he was essentially executed in a kangaroo court. If they had, in fact, honored his surrender and allowed the Saddam supporters to come into Iraqi political life, have a role in Iraqi political life, you know, it may not have spiraled out of control. In the same way, when Gaddafi was picked up after a NATO drone strike on his convoy in CERT, and if he had been arrested and if he was allowed to bring his people to the table and have a political reconciliation towards a new Libya, perhaps a different future would have been before us. But of course, that's not the way the West operates. It demonizes people. It suggests that these people themselves deserve to be killed. I mean, you'll remember that Hillary Clinton, when she was told that Gaddafi had been killed, she laughed and she said, "We came, we saw, we killed him." You know, I mean, this kind of attitude towards the world and towards politics is not an attitude that's going to help anybody learn any lessons.
So let's talk about, in other words, what you're saying basically is that not only is U.S.'s imperial project in the Middle East deeply flawed for its sort of moral and legal aspects, but then when it actually carries them out, it does so with such sheer negligence, with such little care that it actually unleashes even worse chaos than it needs to. And we've seen this, as you've said before, we've seen it even in Afghanistan going decades back. So what lies for Libya's future? I mean, we're seeing just horrific genocidal war in Syria, but there's Bashar al-Assad, who is actually this military force being supported by Russia. In Libya, you don't really have a coherent government anymore that can that has the same kind of traction as, say, Bashar al-Assad does. Can the U.S. Make more headway in a country like Libya from its perspective than in, say, a country like Syria?
Well, you know, it's very difficult to talk about Libya without getting into the minutiae. You know, there are several centers of power in the country. The fractiousness, I think, defines its politics. Under pressure from the West and with support from the United Nations, a government of national accord was created. This government is now based in Tripoli. It unifies some of the factions. But, you know, even in Tripoli, the government's existence is premised on the fact that the local militias give them permission to operate. So there's a great deal of political fractiousness. On the side of it, the West is holding hostage $67 billion of Libya's sovereign fund. You know, they are basically telling the government what to do, dictating the terms, because the government hopes that if they accede to what the West tells them, eventually this money will be turned over. So there's a way in which the Libyan government is not being given any space to breathe. On the other side of it, Mr. Khalifa Haftar, who's prosecuting this war in Benghazi, is backed by the Egyptians, backed by the Saudis. He's a very mysterious character. When he fled Libya in the 1980s, he moved to Vienna, Virginia, 5 minutes drive from Langley, from the CIA headquarters. His own relationship with the American government has never been clarified. So there's a great deal of misuse of Libya, abuse of Libya. And it's hard, Sonali, to have a very simple, straightforward three-point, bullet-point approach to solving the crisis. But certainly what is not going to help solve this crisis is more aerial bombardment, which polarizes people, creates suffering, and especially if there's no strategy, is going to, in my opinion, help destabilize Tunisia.
So rather than a political solution, the U.S. is simply adding more chaos to a chaotic situation. How could an entity like the Islamic State actually inadvertently then flourish within such an environment rather than be degraded or in any way stopped?
Well, you know, again, the Islamic State is only one part of the problem. People who have turned to extremism are in many different groups inside Libya, whether it's Ansar al-Sharia, the group that is supposedly responsible for the killing of Ambassador Stevens, whether it's the Benghazi Shura Council. There are many groups of that ilk that are quite extreme.
But of course, the U.S. The U.S. is selling this as a war that's strictly aimed at the Islamic State.
This is a problem because Libya is much more complicated than that. You know, it's like the situation in Bangladesh. It's to the benefit of the government to say that a few, misguided people are with the Islamic State, because then they can link the event that took place in Dhaka with the kind of currents of world history, this war against the Islamic State. But all the other contradictions inside the society are minimized. Everything is reduced to fighting the Islamic State. The Libya issue is a serious issue where the detailed politics of life there need to be taken seriously. You can't reduce Libya to a caricature of a pro-Western government fighting against the Islamic State. things are much more complex than that. And, you know, generally when one says things are complex, it means they don't understand what's going on. I would say the opposite. People who try to oversimplify what's happening in a place like Libya tend to have lost control of the actual dynamics inside Libya that need to be tended in order for a political solution to be created.
So then finally, Vijay, we are in an election here, a year here in the United States, and it doesn't seem like there are any good options if we look at how the Middle East might be, how our Middle East policy might be set. Do you have any things to offer us, any thoughts to offer us as to how a country like Libya might fare under a Hillary Clinton presidency versus a Donald Trump presidency?
Well, you know, in the New York Times, two people from the the Near Eastern Institute in Washington, D.C., wrote and said that under Hillary Clinton, there should be actually armed attack, aerial attack on the Bashar al-Assad government. You know, it's a very complicated discussion. We're not prepared to have that discussion now. But there is this feeling of trigger happiness with the Clinton administration that I think I fear. I mean, if you look back at some of the WikiLeaks released emails, you see this tendency in Hillary Clinton to search for a military solution when other longer-term, more sustainable political solutions need to be developed. So I'm not, at all feeling confident that if either of these people win the election, will there be a sensible, sane policy vis-a-vis the Middle East. I think we're in for 4 to 8 years of more madness from Washington, D.C.
Well, I am so sad to hear that. But of course, I kind of knew that that would be your answer. Vijay, thank you so much, as always, for joining us. We'll post a link to your article from our website later today.
Thanks a lot.
Vijay Prashad is a professor of international studies at Trinity College in Hartford, Connecticut, and his latest book is The Death of the Nation and the Future of the Arab Revolution. You can find his article about Libya in Alternet, and it's called It's Bombs Away for the USA in Libya. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com.